I grew up in a family of five brothers and sisters. If I played Monopoly and was the banker, if I stole a couple 500s on the side, I didn't feel like I had to go to pray to God to say sorry, because he knows it's just a game that I'm playing with my brothers and sisters. It's not that serious. And that was the thing with the traitors.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hello, you're listening to Premier Christian Radio. I'm Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity Magazine. You have joined us for The Profile, where we sit down with a different Christian each and every week and hear something of their life story. Now, today is special. And it's special because for too many hours, probably around this time last year, I was glued to the TV watching a certain show called The Traitors. I'm sure you've seen it before. It's on BBC. Most amazing reality TV show. And I'm delighted to say that one of the contestants from last year's show is with me in studio. Harry, welcome to The Profile.
Wow, thanks very much for the intro. Thanks for having me,
now,
too.
Now, I've been thinking about this. To what extent can we get away with spoilers? I mean, it's been, you know, like, it's not been on TV in a while. Now, should we say what happened?
Do you know what? I'm such a Tom. Oh, what, from my series?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
You can say, yeah,
so
I
Harry,
guess so.
Harry, you were the first traitor to win the show.
This still as well. Yeah,
still the first traitor to win.
Which is quite cool.
So your life has changed. And I guess that's the first question. For those of us who watched and loved the show, what is life like now compared to before the show?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely insane. I say the best way to explain it was like, it felt as if now I was playing a lottery that I never knew I was playing. It was like I had a ticket to a lottery that I won by accident, literally. I don't know, I put it in a way that, imagine trying to dream a dream that's so impossible and out of reach, which you can't do, because it's impossible to dream a dream that you can't dream. So I know that's a bit confusing, but it's been that insane that I could never have, if you asked me 5 years ago, 2 years ago, to write where I think I would be, I wouldn't have got anywhere near close to what I've done and been managed to achieve upon winning the Traitors, which has been insane.
Yeah, you did incredibly well. You won £95,000.
Mm.
What have you done with the money?
Yeah, so everyone always asks this question. I wish I could be cool about it and say, you know, I went and bought the flashy cars, or if it was down to me, I would have put it all on red in the casino and tried to double my chances. But no, I literally luckily have a dad who's got his head on his shoulders, and I paid off my mum and dad's personal debts and loans so they didn't have to worry, and they had a bit of extra money each month on the table, and the rest is just in an investment account somewhere. Wow. But luckily, I mean, I love being busy. Like, I come from a family of 9 to 5 and I always want to be busy. So I've been that busy, I haven't really had time to think about it or anything. I just sort of keep trying to build it up as much as possible to hopefully one day buy myself my own place.
Incredible. What a sensible thing to do with the money. That's always good to hear. Now, we like to go back to the beginning here on the show and reading your new book, which has just come out. It's called Staying Faithful, published by SPCK. And right from the offset, you say, God has been in my life since I was born.
Yeah.
So tell me more about life growing up and where Christian faith first
came
into the picture.
I mean, the book as a whole, Harry Clark's Staying Faithful, is amazing. And that's just not me saying it. You know, I was so worried, but now I've spoke to people who have read the book and they love it, and they said it was emotional, and it's really nice because it's something I can give back to people. And not only that, I feel like because I'm being so open and honest about everything, you see everything that's important to me in my life, which is, one, my family and my loved ones, but most importantly, my faith, which is what's kept me strong throughout my whole life. And like I touched on in my books, I've had many dark times in my life, and the things that saved me is my faith. So yeah, going back to the start, I was literally religious from a baby, I guess, because I was born into a Roman Catholic family, into Christianity, where my mum and dad were religious. They were baptized, Holy Communion. My grandparents were as well. And then all of me and my brothers and sisters were, you know, baptized, Holy Communion. And I went on to do my confirmation to carry on my faith in the church. So it's been something that's always been prominent in my life from the offset, really.
Yeah. Tell me more about your confirmation, because that was a special moment, wasn't it? What are your memories of that time?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing for that for me was that was really where I found my own faith in a personalized way. So for example, like, some people can get it twisted, I guess. Like, whereas you'll realise in my book, is what I talk about, is that my most point about faith is that it doesn't have to be that deep. And it can also be, it's a personal thing. So everyone can have a different opinion or feel a different type of way. You shouldn't have to look at how a priest lives life or a monk. Yeah, you can look at it and think this is great, but you don't have to see religion the way they see it. Or you don't have to see faith through their eyes. You know, you can make it your own, and you should do that. And my advice is to do that. So my confirmation was that, you know, I'd only ever been to church because my mum made me go to church. And I'd only ever been on Christmas times, and I was just going through the motions, it felt like. But my confirmation was really the moment where I was like, okay, I actually want to carry this on, and I actually want to believe, because faith is a big part of my life. I want to understand it more. So the reason my confirmation was so important was because that was the change in my life where I was like, no, I want to learn more about this. And that's when my faith got deeper, because I understood things more. I then, like I said, came up with my own personal opinion on what faith means to me, and then I was confirmed under St. George, which was quite cool, because my older brother's called George. And obviously, St. George is the English saint, yeah. And he was a warrior who slayed dragons. So that's quite cool nice. To have that in my middle name.
Yeah. What comes through reading your book is there's something lovely about having a kind of simple faith and it not having to be complicated. And you're right, some people go off and they become theologians and they study the Bible to the highest level, and that's fine. But like you say, that doesn't have to be everyone's path. Yeah. And faith is going to be outworked differently in each of our lives. And just because your faith is simple, it doesn't mean it's unimportant or any less valuable. Yeah. But there's something, I mean, Jesus says have a childlike faith. You know, there's something in that, isn't there?
Yeah, it's the same with life, I think. Well, you've seen it with the traitors. Even though my game seemed so complicated and the way I played it, to me it was just simple.
Right.
It was like one thing after the other. I get to point A, and then once I get there, I look at point B. You know, I don't try and look at the game as a whole. Mm-hmm. I just need to get to the next tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And it's the same with faith. Like I always say, the one thing about my book, which is what I love the most, is that it's a memoir at the same time, but my main reason for it is it's a self-help book. So I think the only reason I am where I am today is because of the people that have watched and supported me and loved The Traitors and seem to enjoy me on TV. And that's the only reason I'm here. So this is something I want to give back to people, and people who may be in the dark times, which I've experienced, faith has saved me. And look, I always say in my book, if you try it, at least you've tried it. But whether you believe in God or not, you're no better or lesser of a person than anyone else in this world. But as long as you give it a go, that could be your saviour. And it's what saved me. So who's to say that it might not save you? But like I say throughout the book, it doesn't have to be that deep.
Yeah. Well, let's follow it through in your life, because I guess next came the army. Tell me a bit about what made you want to join the army, and I guess what your experience was of that as well.
Yeah, I think it's quite an opposite of religion and obviously faith, because, you know, you're supposed to love everyone and obviously never...
Love your enemies, shoot your enemies.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Going into the military, I wanted to do something different. I was born in Slough, born and raised. And I love Slough, and I love my childhood growing up there. It made me strong, it made me who I am. But no one ever left Slough. So I would walk around, you know, go to the pub with my brothers, and you would see the same old people in there, you know, who's gone to work from the age of 16, just like I did. And they worked on a building site. Then they're in the pub, they've had kids young, they're still in Slough, never left Slough, and they go there and they moan about their missus or kids Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then go back to work Monday. And I just thought I didn't want that for myself. I wanted to get out and try and explore the world, you know. So I thought that's the easiest way to do that. On top of that, I was I was football mad, boxing mad. And it was my granddad who actually served in the forces that said, what do you want to do after school? And I said, you know, I want to be a professional boxer or a football player. Obviously, he knew I wasn't that good at both, because he was like, why don't you join the army? Because you can do both and get paid. To me, as a 15-year-old kid, because I was 15 and a half when I did my assessment centre and got a place in the army, it was like a dream come true.
Yeah.
So you're telling me I can play football, box, run around a field and shoot guns and get paid. It was like, this is
that's
a dream.
Every young boy's dream, right?
Yeah, but then at the same time, obviously, there was so much more behind the scenes that I didn't know about the army, which was when I then joined and learnt that you could be a helicopter engineer. Never seen a helicopter before in my life. You can even be a bricklayer, a chef, or a postman, you know, and you can do all of these jobs while in the army. You can even be a priest in the army. So it was like that. It opened such a massive world to me. And it was just the most amazing experience ever.
Fantastic. If it was so amazing, why apply for the traitors and why transition out of the army?
Of course, yeah. So the simple answer is I got offered 120 grand. So I would have been silly to not take that. And I think every single person in the world would take that. But no, I think my army career, I really wanted to start the next chapter of my life. You'll see in my book, I seem to be one of them guys or one of them people that just always wants more from life. I massively went through some big stuff during the army, which strengthened my faith, but also gave me like life experience that I never knew I needed. And I sort of live with that now. You know, you see how beautiful life is in the army, but you also see how quickly it can be taken away, which you then learn to value every moment you have here. So then I was really one of them people that was like, you know, if I'm not here tomorrow, I don't want to regret not going for something. So it's the same when I run a marathon now or signed up for the London Marathon next year. It's because I don't want to be gone tomorrow and then go, oh, I wish I'd done that, you know, or I wish I'd done this. That's my fear in life is say maybe not being here tomorrow and then regretting not doing things. So when the Traitors came along, I was literally in the army and I was looking for the next chapter of my life anyway. I'd obviously met Anna, my girlfriend, and I was like, I want to start the next chapter of my life, family, house. And I didn't want to be away from home anymore. I was away Monday to Friday, only got to see my family over the weekend, but that was spread between my family, Anna's family, my friends, her friends, my army friends. So it just always seemed like I was on go 7 days a week, 24/7. So then I got a message on Instagram from a caster from the Traitors.
And so they found you?
Yeah, yeah. I thought this game sounds kind of sick. I remember it so clearly. Obviously, I think it was through Anna because luckily, I mean, my girlfriend does social media and stuff. So she was a singer and her brothers and her family were always in that industry. But I never got involved. I was happy having the private life. I think she was happy I was having the private life too. And then they messaged me from some of her TikToks of me just being an idiot, I guess. And they were like, oh, we think you'd look good on the Traitors. And I was like, wow. Okay, what does this mean? Because I never saw Series 1. And then I remember I thought it was a scam. So I was like, no, thanks,
you
scam.
Would, wouldn't you?
You would. You're like,
someone I don't know, out of the blue, do you want to come on TV?
Yeah, also private on everything. So I was like, this is such, like, I'm not giving you my bank details, please go away. And then it was, they left their phone number and email address and they said there was a real person. I was like, that's what any scammer would say. But because they left them two things, I told Anna, and she was like, a scammer wouldn't leave their personal email address and number. So I thought, all right then. Left it a couple of days, staring at my ceiling one night, thinking I need to change my life, man. I need to do something different in my life. Rang the number. They explained the whole game, how amazing it was, how Series 1 went for about a couple of hours. And I was like, yeah, this sounds kind of cool, but still didn't think anything of it. Then right at the end, she goes, oh, and you can win some prize money. And I was like, oh, really? She was like, yeah, 120 grand. I was like, why did you not start with that? Because it doesn't matter what the game is. I'm in. I'm playing. And I'm going to go win it. And then that was it. I then did the same application process as everyone else went through.
Amazing. And I'm fascinated at this idea that you would go on a TV show having not seen the first season. So even at the point of entering the castle, you hadn't seen?
Nah, I'm not a TV kind of guy. I know it's kind of ironic. But I guess I'm just like that sort of, I'm not saying, I don't want to say it, make anyone sound bad, but I'm not a TV person. I've always been an outside kid, never really liked being on my phone too much. Most I've done is game, you know, so I'll game, or if I'm going to bed, I'll watch Netflix or YouTube. That was always like my thing, where I knew it was going to end so that I could fall asleep. Otherwise, you know, like a series, it does my head in because I need to know what happens next. So I'll binge a series straight away. So I never watch TV really. The most I'd ever watched was The Jungle with my parents when I was like 10 or 11 or something. So I'd never watched Traitors Series 1. Wow. And I think it done me the world of good doing that, because going in, I didn't have any pre-assumptions. I didn't have any pre-made plans. And that's where people in my series went wrong, I think, because they tried planning out the whole thing.
Yes.
And when it came to the point where something happened that they didn't plan for, they were stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
Whereas I just went with the flow.
There was too much game planning.
Yeah, there was too much.
On.
Yeah, there was. People just deeped it too much. And like you can tell from my book and my life, I really don't deep anything too much.
I love that. And I love that it worked out for you. Yeah. You went on to win the show having not even seen the first version and not really had a massive... Mm. Well, you didn't have a game plan, but then you also write in the book about how you were kind of constantly switched on and constantly thinking through what you were doing, which you have to in that kind of scenario, don't you?
I think that's the same as my life. Like I have this stupid persona about me where I have no general knowledge and I seem like I don't know what's going on. But behind the scenes, I always am switched on in a sense that I always know what's going on. For example, if you put me in an exam or something, I'd be useless. Or if you put me in a general knowledge exam, I'd be useless. But if you put me in a field where you've got to command a team of soldiers or something to attack an enemy position under a high-stress environment, I can switch on like that. So it was the same with the Traitors. Like, I never had a plan, because you can never pre-plan for something in the future that's not happened yet. But I say, like, it's always good to have a plan, but it might be a squiggly line. You know, it's never a straight plan and it goes perfect. But my plan was always a squiggly line where things would happen and I would just react with them happening. But I always had a plan for when it did happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, how do you view the Traitors? Is it just a game?
Yeah, of course.
So
That's why my morals and my religion, like, nothing. Everyone always says
but
that.
But just to play devil's advocate for a moment, if it's just a game, fine. But were you not forming a level of real friendship and relationship with your other contestants? That was real, wasn't it? You had a real friendship?
I guess so. But at the same time, for me, I was very good at compartmentalising. And these people in my life, and although it felt like ages, we was only there for, like, say, 4 weeks or 4.5 weeks. So it was very easy for me to look at them and think, they don't really know who I am. They don't know me as a person. Whereas I've got people at home who have loved me for 22 years unconditionally. They're the reason I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm not here to share the money with people I've known for 4 weeks.
In watching the show, and I personally think it's one of the reasons you managed to win, you were very good at being able to do that. You were friendly with people.
Yeah, of course.
But you weren't letting it emotionally affect you. There were some other contestants where it was really hard because they were having to portray my friend, whereas you didn't see it as, these aren't my friends. This is just a game and you're able to compartment, which you kind of have to do, don't you, to win to a certain degree. Otherwise, your feelings might get the better of you and think, well, I can't screw that person over because they're my friend.
Yeah, I think, again, it was lucky I was in the army from the age of 16. I was a boy in a man's world and I really learned how to control my emotions. And you learn how to give enough emotion to a certain situation. You're not emotionless, you just know how to control them. So you know when to use the right emotions, I guess. And obviously for me, I knew when to use it for acting wise and knew when to put stuff on or put it off a little bit, and you couldn't do too much. The hardest thing about the traitors is you need that perfect balance. So you can't be doing too much, but you can't be seen to do being too little. So you need that perfect balance in the middle, which I think I did perfectly in a sense because of the army experience. I always say the army was like the moulding factor. I had all the characteristics of me. It was just the army moulded them all together. And
you felt
them all
that
together.
Quite early on. You felt you were going to win the show.
Well, I was the youngest. And it's the same through my life. You know, like, it's, I mention it in the book, is like, I've always been doubted my whole life. Like, it's always, now you're never going to be able to do that. I'm dyslexic. Never going to be able to write a book. Well, I did. Like, you're never going to be able to do this. My avionics technician, the 11% pass rate. You're never going to be able to learn the theory of flight in physics, because I didn't even pass physics in GCSE. Well, I did. So it was, I love to prove people wrong. So when I got to the traitors, I knew I was the youngest. So I knew playing that sort of gullible card was right, because they wouldn't be able to expect a kid my age to be able to be pulling the strings from behind. And that's just what gave me the energy and the boost to keep going on, because that was exactly what was happening.
Yes. Well, there was at least one other Christian in the game, Reverend Lisa.
Well, I mean, I was the series before Lisa, but I have seen her after the game. She's an amazing person. It's quite funny because, like Christians himself just seem to be really nice people. And, like, sometimes you think they're too nice. Like, and she was really nice.
That's really lovely that you collected after the game. Yeah. And you know, I remember she was explaining that the same thing as you. Like, it's just a game. Why wouldn't you as a Christian, you know, go on to this? And you didn't feel in any way kind of, like, morally compromised by it, I guess. You were able to see it just as a game.
Yeah, like, it was just a game. And if anyone was there, you know, people won't admit to this who's on my series, but 90% of them people, if they were offered to be a traitor, they would have said yes 100%. You know, if they were in my shoes in the same positions, they would have done the exact same things. And that's what helped me sleep at night. But at the same time, it's like, I grew up in a family of five brothers and sisters. If I played Monopoly and was the banker, if I stole a couple 500s on the side, I didn't feel like I had to go to pray to God to say sorry, because he knows it's just a game that I'm playing with my brothers and sisters. It's not that serious. And that was the thing with the traitors. Obviously, it was really intensified and it was high pressured environment, and, like, seeing it on TV was amazing, of course.
Yeah.
But in my head, I knew it was just a game. These people don't actually get murdered in real life. It's just a game show for money, really.
Yes, absolutely. When you were watching it, but I mean, it's fascinating how, you know, you win the show and then you have to basically keep quiet about the fact that you've won and you can't tell anyone. And so you have quite a long period of time, don't you, where you're waiting. And then you do watch it back. What was that experience like of watching yourself back on TV? Were there things that sort of missed out in the edit, or you remembered it sort of slightly differently when you watched it back?
Yeah, I think the experience as a whole was really weird, because obviously I went from winning. So it felt like I went from sleeping in a ditch, getting rained on with my rifle in the army, to going up to Scotland winning 120 grand, or 95 grand, sorry, and then going back to a hole in the ditch for 6 months.
Yeah.
It was
really
weird. So you
had really to go weird. Back into
the
army?
Yeah, I was back in the army, yeah. But yeah, it was just weird, I guess. But it was, again, just easy for me, because it was like I said to myself, well, what's the point in dealing with these emotions now? It's not even out yet. No one knows. So I said to myself, as soon as I got back to the army, put them all in a box, lock it away until it actually comes out in January or February, whenever it came out. And then that's how I just carried on with the army. Yeah. And also, I didn't want to lose my money. You know, I didn't want anything. I didn't want any leaks. I didn't want to lose. Like, I didn't want to make. Like, I didn't want to. I just wanted to play by the rules.
Because that's the other thing people don't realise is you were not going to get that prize money that you'd won until the final.
It was a couple of weeks after the final had aired. Right. Yeah. So
but, you had to keep it secret.
Yeah, but also I was excited to keep it a secret because I quite liked the surprise on my family's face.
Yeah.
Like, my mum and dad knew, my brothers and sisters, but I have about 30-odd cousins. My aunties and uncles, they didn't know anything. My grandparents didn't know anything. So it was the coolest experience to be able to go, oh, granny, stick your TV on at 9 p.m. on a Wednesday, BBC One, you know, and then she sees me pop up. You know, like, that was just cool. And again, that's all I thought would come of it. So I was just playing around with it a little bit. But yeah, watching it was just like reliving the experience again. And of course, like I say, our reality was different because, well, imagine it's simple and it's easy to imagine because we're filmed for loads of hours in a day, but you only see 1 hour put together. So there's multiple conversations that you will have that will naturally you won't see because there's not enough time to put that in.
Yeah.
So yeah, but living it again was just crazy. I remember watching the final and obviously I was on the edge of my seat thinking, how does this guy get out of this? And it was me. Like, I knew I'd won, but it was like, it was that well edited and that great TV that I couldn't believe I had made it out of that.
Yeah, it was just an amazing, amazing moment.
This August in Premier Christianity magazine, we dive into justice, music and football. Lawyer Janice Machemi talks about campaigning for the powerless, worship leader Pat Barrett on Christian music's big comeback, and Premier League legend John Bostock, who leads Ballers in God. Subscribe for 12 months at $44.99 and receive a free copy of Inspired, the best-selling book by Simon Gilbo. Sign up at premierchristianity.com.
And people who've watched the show will understand why this is the case, but you write in the book about kind of feeling a bit guilty or not really knowing how you're going to be perceived.
Yeah,
because you have this incredible moment where you do win the show, but those who've seen the show will know you win the show in a way that might have been a bit controversial. People might have thought badly of you. So you have quite a long period of kind of wondering when this thing airs on TV, how are the public going to respond to me? And you write about this in the book and that wrestle with that. And just explain that and explain how it turned out in the end.
Yeah, I think, well, naturally, people always want the good guys to win. And when I was in the traitors are the bad guys. The faithfuls are the good guys. So everyone always wants the faithfuls to win and will be on the team of the good people. But for me, luckily, I mean, yeah, obviously it was worrying the first couple of weeks. And when you see me actually win that moment in the show, I hadn't sunk in. Like, I kissed my teeth and like that's a bit bad though, isn't it? And then Claudia was amazing to make me feel great about it and be like, that was the game. Like, you just outsmarted everyone essentially. And like, you should be happy you have done that. So that made me feel better, and the whole production team were amazing. Even the finalists were amazing. But then leaving, I was like, of course, like the whole UK might hate me here because I've ruined 21 other people who were all amazing and all had their own stories and their own rights.
It's a very understandable fear because, you know, frankly, there are people out there in the media and in the celebrity world who, and hate is not too strong a word, who are hated because they've gone on a reality show, they've played the game in a certain way, and they become these hate figures. So it's quite a reasonable and understandable fear that you might have that you'd be received in that way.
Yeah, but I think I was happy anyway. So like I explained in my book, I'd got to a stage in my life where I was so happy with everything in my life anyway, that I was like, if this is all I have, even if everyone hates me in the UK, at least I've still got my loved ones around me, at least I've still got my family. Because I always say, tomorrow, if it ended tomorrow, all of this stuff, which has been amazing, at least I can look back and say I gave it a good old go. But if I'm under a bridge tomorrow, but I'm with my mum, my dad, my brothers and my sisters, my loved ones, then I'd be just as happy as I was today. And obviously I had a 95 grand as well that no hate could take away. So I was like, I guess I'm a little bit more happier as well.
Brilliant.
So, but thankfully as well, I must say, like, the public took it so well.
Yeah.
And they all seemed to, but I think they could see that I was just being myself. I was an open book. And I always say, like, the traitors, I didn't have to be a traitor. That's what people get wrong. When they chose to be traitors, they go, oh my gosh, I need to act like a traitor. I need to be a traitor. That's the worst thing you can do, because the best traitor is a faithful. And I was a faithful every day, open book, never lied about anything until I put a cloak on. Then that's when I switched. You know, I had that Jekyll and Hyde switch, and it just felt like in my head, all I told myself was, this is just an extra role. Just like Monopoly, if you're the banker, you've got an extra role to play to keep the game going.
You make it sound so simple and so easy. If it were me, I would crumble at the first hurdle. I wouldn't be able to live with the duplicity of it all, but you did it brilliantly. And it was incredibly entertaining to watch. If you just joined us, we're speaking to Harry from The Traitors. His new book is Staying Faithful. It's out with SPCK. Talking about the show. I'd love to talk a bit about what happened after the show. What is life like after The Traitors? Just to explain the story of what happened to you, because you went back to the army, but you were going to leave the army, weren't you?
Yeah.
And then I guess a whole new world of possibilities have opened up for you in terms of career just as a result of being on this show.
Yeah. I think I got really lucky, actually. And there was one person, I explained the story in my book, but essentially I never expected, for one, anything to happen after The Traitors. I thought it'd be cool to show my granny and granddad me on TV for a bit. And by the way, I find myself the biggest ick in the world. Like, I can't watch myself back at all. I send a voice note on WhatsApp and chuck my phone because I'm like, oh, that voice is so annoying.
Hey, I'm presenting on a radio station right now. I do not want to hear this back. Yeah. I don't like the sound of my
own
voice.
I mean?
I don't think anyone does.
So I was one of them people where I was like, but that's all I thought would come of it. My granny and granddad can watch it.
Yep.
And they'd think it's cool.
Yeah.
Anna never thought anything of it. My girlfriend, obviously. My family didn't either, really. Well, Anna had a bit more of an idea, but never to the extent. And obviously the show come out and people loved it. Like, it was like instantly a hit. And then obviously at the same time I had like managements getting involved, and now this was a new world to me. And just like I explained in my book, I have so many thank yous to everyone out there, because I also got so lucky with them people in my life who helped me in the right direction. But I never wanted to be like a Harry from The Traitors. I just wanted to be normal Harry from Slough who got his money and then went in to work on trains in the maintenance. And people might say, well, why don't you do that now? And it's a story I talk about in my book, whereas when I got in a taxi and there was a taxi driver who was so excited for me to be in there, and he was taking me into London. We had a selfie before. I didn't really know what was going on. Then I just spoke to him and he said, The Traitors was the one thing that brought three generations of his family together on the sofa. So him, his dad, his adult son and his teenage son, all of them every Friday sat on a sofa, ordered in a takeaway and watched the three episodes of The Traitors. And they said, this guy was from Slough and he said, we could resonate with you because you're just like us. You live in a council house in Slough. We wanted you to do so well. He's like, you need to keep going, like, because people can resonate with you. Yeah. And want to be and can see that it doesn't matter who you are or where you're from, you can make something out of nothing. So then when I had that conversation with him, that was really like, yeah, why don't we give this a go and see what happens? And obviously this was 2 years ago and we're still going now strong. But like I said, I also got very lucky with the people in my life, like Gary Neville, who saved me, like with the contracts and stuff. And then you're signed with Alex at Intertalent. Then I have people like Rosie who look after me, like Image. Like, I have so many people around me. It's like this book, especially with SPCK, the Harry Clark Staying Faithful, is a give back to all of them. Because I wouldn't be in the position I am at all without these people in my life.
Yeah. So what do you want to do now?
Oh, my gosh. Mate, whatever. You give me an idea, I'll go for it. I promise you, like, that's how I've always been, is like any opportunity that comes my way, I'll grab with both hands and make the most of it. Because like I said, it's the same with my boxing training. That it was all in my training. When I boxed, that was the reward, just like The Traitors. So I didn't want to turn around, win or lose in the boxing. As long as I could turn around and say, I've done everything I could. Mm. My granddad would say, tap me on the back and go, well, then we go on to the next one then. Mm. Same with The Traitors. I'd done everything I could. So that final, I wasn't actually that stressed. I was more excited and relieved that it was over. Like, because I'd made it to the final and there was nothing else I could have done to put myself in a better position. So even if I lost that, yeah, I would have been gutted. But I would have said there was honestly nothing I could have done. I could raise my hand to that. So it's the same with this industry, this job. As long as, if I'm on a building site next week, as long as I can turn around and say I made the most out of every opportunity, then I couldn't have done anything else. But I mean, for me, there's so many things I want to do, obviously, resonate with people back at home. There's hopefully a few documentaries we're working on. Hopefully this book people love, The Harry Clark Staying Faithful, which is out the 30th of September. You can buy that wherever you buy your books. And then who knows? Who knows? I want to set myself some challenges. Like I said, I've got the London Marathon next year. Hopefully that I want to do an Ironman after that. I just want to raise money. I just want to help people. I just want to help people and show people that it doesn't matter who you are or what you look like or where you come from or what you believe in. You can just be whatever you want to be and you can just go on and do whatever you want to do. Like, life is so precious and we're only here for a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
No one's going to remember you. Everyone always says it. No one's going to remember you in 100 years, 200 years. So, and that's what I'm okay with. So I'm going to make the most of my time that I've got now and live in the present.
Yeah. It's a great outlook. It's a great attitude to have. one of the things you've done since The Traitors is another BBC show, Pilgrimage, which sees a number of celebrities go on a very, very long walk, a long hike, often somewhere in Europe, often somewhere with great spiritual significance. I love the story of how you even got to go on the show. Mm. Just tell us that story of how this opportunity came about and you realise, wow, this is perfect for you in terms of the importance of your faith and that being part of this show.
Yeah, so I was on... I obviously did Celebrity SES, and I mean, I can even tell myself that I was absolutely terrible on that show. I was not in the right place, one physically or mentally, and it was so quickly after winning The Traitors where I was so lost because I didn't know what life had meant. Mm. I just left the army quicker than I expected. Like, I was supposed to leave in the October, but I left in like that February because of how crazy The Traitors stuff was. Thanks to them, they obviously let me out early, but then I didn't know, I had no structure, no routine to my life. So anyway, I went and did the Celebrity SAS, and it was probably the worst thing to ever happen to me. But in a sense, it was also a blessing in disguise because it was the sort of rocket up my backside, if I'm allowed to say that, mm-hmm. that helped me on and like was like, I need to sort myself out. Mm-hmm. But after that, don't get me wrong, it wasn't just a switch instantly where I finished the show and was like, okay, I'm sorting myself out now. Not at all. I was like, again, battling demons, like the previous story of when I was in the army and when I first went through that and what made my faith stronger because it saved me there. When I was in that sort of time, I was like, everyone's going to hate me. You know, no one's going to want to watch me on TV again. No one's ever going to invite me to do a radio again because of how useless I was. I've embarrassed myself, my army, the family. So I didn't really know how to get back from that. And then my mum, again, the superwoman she is, just pray. That's the one thing you know how to do. And I mentioned in the story before when I was in the army how my prayer switched at that moment. And I said thanks for everything I had. And I was subconsciously just being grateful for all of the little things I had in life. And I did the same thing. But on the end of these prayers, after that show, I just started praying for a sign. Like that, I'm just in the right place. Yeah. Like just let me know that there's something there and I'm not just doing this all for nothing. And then funny enough, my manager rang me and was like, are you religious by any chance? And I was like, yeah, why? And he was like, I never knew that. I was like, well, you never asked. Because no one ever actually asked someone if you're religious or not. So I was like, well, you never asked. I'm not just going to randomly just start blurting God to you, like randomly. And he was like, oh, you've been asked to go on a pilgrimage. And I just like...
Wow.
I sort of went, wow, okay.
That's a sign, isn't it?
And then like I just like, you know, just like shook my head in disbelief that like, well, there couldn't have been a bigger sign than that. Like
yeah.
I've been going on the pilgrimage now, also filming a TV show. So not only is it work, but it's for me especially and my faith. Like it was just like the perfect package in one.
Yeah.
And then obviously it turned out to be one of the most amazing things I've ever done.
So before we get to the pilgrimage, I'd love to hear more about why that was so spiritually significant. If we just go back a little bit, because you told the story of getting confirmed in the Catholic Church, but you also write in the book that really around that time of The Traitors, like you perhaps weren't massively kind of living out your faith or you've lost it in some way. So can you just take us back a bit and explain kind of what had happened, how you went from like quite passionate about your faith as a child to then sort of slightly losing it?
Yeah, it was just, I guess, naturally. So like I always say this, for everyone must feel the same way, that like your faith in your religion is like a wave. So some days it might be weaker than other days where it might be stronger. So for me it was like once I won The Traitors again, I just sort of took a back seat, which was my own doing. But I was so busy and I was so like, oh my gosh, what is this life? You know, I'm here, there, I'm everywhere.
Yeah.
So it was like, it just took a back seat like naturally, which was my own doing, like I said, and I didn't put enough effort into it. And then it was just like, you know, it became foggy, like my faith and my religion, because it was again like, why is this happening to me? How come I put on so much weight? How come this? How come that? And it's like, actually, it's my own fault. So then that was after The Traitors where I said like it got foggy and it was sort of this thing that took a backseat for me. And then obviously once I'd done the Celebrity SES, it was when I went back to my faith again and it just came through once more in my life. Seemed to save me again, seemed to save all my relationships, save me as a person, save me as a career, I guess. And then now it's stronger than ever.
Wow. So tell me more about the pilgrimage, just for those who haven't seen it. What's that experience like? I mean, this is a number of different celebrities, number of different religious backgrounds, all going on a pilgrimage together. How did you find that experience?
Oh, it was just amazing. I can't even, like, I want everyone to experience it. I think everything that I do in my life, I wish I could just have a little piece of it so I can just give it to someone to experience too. Because like the pilgrimage, one, I was there with these celebrities who are amazing at their job. So not only am I finding out about religion, I'm finding life lessons. And again, I've been the youngest to ever do the pilgrimage. So I feel like I'm kind of like a sponge where I do these things, and these people have been in the industry 20 odd years. Helen Lederer is in the industry for 50 plus years. You know, the life lessons I learned from them and not to stress. And like, yeah, it's hard, and everyone goes through them times of, well, I haven't got work next week. Does that mean I need to find a job? Does that mean, you know, just the way they gave me a sense of calmness was amazing. But on top of that, they all had different religions, which, funny enough, it was the best thing for me, because before I went on the pilgrimage, I didn't want to be that person that couldn't have a debate with you or a discussion because I didn't know anything about your religion. So I actually took time to dive into every other religion.
So before you go on the show, you start researching the people who, well, not the people who go on the show, but the faith of the people who
faith,
are on the show.
Yeah, so I'm researching the Muslim religion, the Jewish.
So you could hold a conversation.
Yeah, so I could hold a conversation. Yeah. So, and then, because also then I understood why, what, and what my mind meant to me, if that makes sense. So like, I didn't want to just say, oh, I'm Roman Catholic or I'm Christian because my mum and dad are. You know, that's not really an answer. Like, what does it actually mean to me? So that was the best, well, that was probably the best thing about the pilgrimage, was I really found out what it means to me and why I am what I am. Like, am I just a Christian because I was born into a Christian family who goes to church? Or should I be a Muslim? Or should I be Jewish? Does that resonate with me more? And what I'd found out was that, no, what my faith means to me is the closest I feel to God. So that's going to carry on to be my faith. And then it made me so much more knowledgeable in their religions. But it also then meant, when I was on this pilgrimage with these guys, like, I could learn so much from them, because they're obviously all into their religions too. So I just learned so much, but it just strengthened mine. Yeah. And like I said, it was the most amazing experience. Not only am I learning life lessons, not only am I learning knowledge about religion, I'm also strengthening my faith and feeling closer to my God, and like, knowing that I was in the right place for me personally. You know, it wasn't that I'm saying, oh, I'm right, like my religion is right. That's not what I'm saying. Like, the pilgrimage for me was me personally and my own beliefs and my own faith. It let me know to me that I was doing okay and that I'm in the right place.
Love it. So, what does your faith look like today?
Yeah.
You've said a number of times it's saved you, it's been there through the ups and downs. Like, if I had to say, look, Harry, you seem like a nice guy. I'm not a Christian, I'm an atheist. Now, what difference does all this God stuff actually make to your life? Or what does it mean to you?
I'd say to you straight away, why does it have to make a difference? You know, why does it actually have to make a difference? You can be an atheist, I can still love you. I could be a religious person, you could still love me. Like, there should be no divide or misconception, because... So at the end of the day, what mine looks like to me is, if I passed away tomorrow, touch wood that doesn't happen, but if I did and there was no God, and then you came to me and said, well, Harry, I'm an atheist now, do you regret your life, living your life through faith and regret your life believing in a God that was never there? I'd say no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because the thing that my faith teaches me is how to be a nice person. It teaches me how to love one another. It teaches me how to be loved and love people. So even if there was nothing after death, you know what, I can look back on my life and still say that I was the best version of myself, best version possible, while living my life. I was trying to be the nicest as possible. I was trying to be the loveliest person as possible. So then you can't knock me for that. So I still wouldn't regret it. So that's kind of like what my faith means to me.
Yeah. Hearing you say that reminds me of the phrase, love God, love people. And how, like, that's what Christianity often boils down to, love God and love people. Mm. And how we can sometimes complicate it sometimes, can't we? And get into all sorts of debates and discussions. And I think there's a lovely simplicity in, are you loving God and are you loving people? And that, you know, you sort of put that at the centre and you won't go too far wrong, really, will you?
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I would add to that as well is, like, there was something I heard the other day from a monk that I interviewed. And he said, probably one of the best things he said to me was, that it's okay to have 1,000 questions for God. You know, every day I wake up and I've got a question about my faith. Well, what does this mean? Well, does this mean like I'm believing aliens? And then someone answers it and then I've got 2 more questions. And he says, but that's okay, as long as you'd never doubt God. And so I will never doubt God now. And I know he's there for me. But the questions is fine. Because sometimes you can have so many questions and think, oh, maybe I'm a bad Catholic or maybe I'm a bad Christian. There's no such thing. You know, it's okay to have questions. You just know, as long as you never doubt, then you're in the right place.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. No such thing as a bad Christian. Yeah. We're all sinners saved by grace at the end of the day, aren't we? Yeah, that's a lovely thought. I love that. So the book is coming out, as you say, in September, available wherever books are sold. Harry Clark, Staying Faithful, published by SPCK. It's been wonderful to chat, Harry, and hear more of your own story. I mean, I'm interested, as you kind of tour around, do more media, you know, how much of a interest is there in the kind of the faith side of who you are as a person, because, you know, we could talk about all sorts of stuff, but clearly your Catholic faith is very meaningful and very deep for you. And some Christians think, you know, the world, maybe they're not interested or they hate us. Like, is that true? Is that your experience? Or do you find there's an openness actually to talking about the deeper things of life?
I just think it depends on the person. I just think it depends on the human being you're speaking to and whether they've got an openness to speak to you about it too. Maybe they're an atheist who doesn't want to speak about religion. You know, my older brother isn't really religious. So that's fine. We just don't talk about it. And it's like, I understand where people come from in that sense. It's 2025. And like I said, my manager goes, "Oh, you're religious? Oh, I didn't know that." Yeah, because you never asked.
Yeah.
It's like, because you never want to be that person to push religion upon someone. Because then you, 2025, sometimes you feel like you look like a religious nutcase in like a nice way. And I never wanted to be that, so I was never open about it, because it's like, I don't want people who don't believe in God to think that I won't get on with them because I'm religious, you're not.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it seems like there's a big shift, and obviously there's a big interest in religion. And if I can just give a bit of guidance into what I think, and I, don't get me wrong, I'll say this with my hands held high, I'm not a religious teacher at all. Like, I don't see myself like that. I just have my own personal opinions, which might help someone who's thinking the same way. Or who might be thinking along the same lines. But whether you're religious or not, like I said at the start of this, it means you're no better or lesser of a person.
Yeah, yeah. I love what you said about your faith has saved you. You said your faith saved you on more than one occasion. Can you just give us an example of what you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, I go into depth in the book, and it's essentially when I was at my lowest, rock bottom, struggling with mental health, like suicide and all that stuff, God was the one thing that saved me through prayer. Because me, in my personal life, I was the rock for my family and my loved ones, and I had that macho man thinking, which I know is stupid, but if I was to tell you, if you was to tell me your problems and I came to you the next day with mine, you would then feel you can't really come to me, because I wouldn't go to you then if you come to tell me, because I would feel like you're already struggling and I can't make you struggle more of the burdens from me that you've got to carry. So I was that rock for my family, and I carried all the burdens. And I felt like I had no release, because I wanted to be as strong as possible for my family. And even though they were there for me, my family loved me dearly. But it was my faith and it was my God that I could put my burdens onto. And that gave me the sense of calmness that I'll be all right. So that brought me back from some dark times in my life. And I, like I said, the book, my main focus on the book is to just help one person. Because if that one person can help another person, and then that person helps another one, that's just a beautiful chain effect I've created by writing a book for one person that it means something to.
Absolutely. That is a beautiful place to leave it. Harry, thank you so much for coming in and chatting all things Traitors, new book and more. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.